It's a big ask, hundreds of millions of dollars to improve the downtown people mover. Should we all pay more at the pump for that? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, our friends at the Jackson weigh in on that gas tax hike proposal. Already getting calls? Join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, some tips on how to chill out this Stress Awareness Month. First, though, the latest numbers on the pandemic. The state now has 2.1 million confirmed cases of COVID, 34,439 deaths. Meanwhile, Duval County's health department is announcing today free walk-in availability of the Moderna vaccine at two locations. No appointments needed. To go get your Moderna shot, you can go to South Jacksonville Health Services at 3225 University Boulevard South and their Central Health Plaza at 515 West 6th Street. For South Jacksonville Health, the walk-in time will be from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And of course, there are a multitude of other places you can go get your vaccination, so please go do it. The other big story we're following this morning, should we all pay more at the pump? 6 cents more per gallon, to be exact, to fund some long-delayed infrastructure improvements across the city. The Jacksonville City Council is debating a proposed increase in the local gas tax. And they will be voting on that at some point soon. But here's the controversy around it. The JTA, the Jacksonville Transportation Authority, wants a big chunk of that revenue to go toward a revamp of the downtown Skyway. We are speaking with a couple of local journalists who have an expertise in urban planning and transportation issues right now. They are Ennis Davis and Mike Field with our friends over at thejacksonmag.com, and they're both on the line. Guys, good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning. Glad to be here.
It's 549-2937 to join us as we talk about the proposal to increase the local gas tax. Give us a call. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaNJax. And our Facebook page is open. Ennis Davis, let's begin with you. The Jackson is critical of JTA's plan to convert the Skyway into a system of autonomous vehicles. They're calling this the ultimate urban circulator. This would cost $379 million in the proposed gas tax increase. Why are you guys against this?
Well, first, I would just say that we're not necessarily against mass transit or investing in the Skyway. However, we think this particular proposal, the amount of money that it costs, it gives us caution, and we believe that the community ought to have a transparent conversation about the pros and cons of investing this much money in such a project that has tons of unknowns at this point.
Too many unknowns. Michael Field, what about that? JTA is saying this could be a game changer for the downtown area, and it could actually transform the Skyway into something that people want to ride. They would send these autonomous vehicles to the stadium, to San Marco and Riverside, up to UF Health Jacksonville. That all sounds good.
That sounds great, and that'd be wonderful to have a really good functioning mass transit system that connects not only to popular neighborhoods like Riverside and San Marco, but also to transit dependent communities like the East Side and Durkeyville, the types of neighborhoods that really could feed a significant amount of riders into this system. From everything we've been discussing with JTA, who've been very forthcoming with us, we're still not particularly impressed with the capability technologies that is being proposed here. And really, we feel so far that's not unlike the pilot program that was the Skyway, 30 plus years ago. There are a lot of unknowns. Right now, these autonomous vehicles have far less capacity than most any other forms of mass transit right now. They carry less passengers than a simple bus. Mm. Now, JTA says, well, we can expand these things in the future, but we don't really know that yet. Frankly, we don't even know that these autonomous vehicles can operate when it's raining outside. Now,
why don't we know that?
Maybe those technologies, they currently do not.
Okay.
So, we we may think that in 5 to 10 years down the road, the engineers can figure out these issues. But is that something we really want to, you know, invest almost $500 million in, you know, over the next 30 years to try to figure that out?
Right. The price tag, Ennis, is $379 million. Out of the overall, an increase in the gas tax would also pay for a lot of other things, a lot of other infrastructure improvements all over town. Are you generally in favor of the gas tax overall, just not necessarily for the Skyway, Ennis?
Yeah, I mean, the gas tax is a very innovative way to fund a lot of infrastructure needs in our community. I mean, we all well know that we are underfunded for a lot of these projects that have been sitting on the shelf for a while. So the gas tax in and of itself is a good potential way to resolve some of these issues. However, when it comes, you know, to the cost of spending, you know, $379 million of that gas tax on a project that will serve, you know, so limited amount of people, and even mentioning the $379 million, that's not including the $44 million that's already funded for the Bay Street Innovation Corridor. So essentially, we're talking about a $423 million project that will have potentially less capacity than the Skyway has today. So just from that perspective, we feel there needs to be just additional conversation, ways to maybe we can streamline the amount of money going to this particular project, which will open up the door to allow for, you know, hundreds of millions to go to other needs, infrastructure needs across the city, that's not just limited to a downtown area.
And Mike, the Jackson is saying, let's take that $379 million and fund other things like the Emerald Trail, which is the green belt that Groundwork Jacksonville is trying to build all around the city, where you could walk or bike in a green belt loop all around town. And then also bring the Amtrak station back downtown to the multimodal transit center that's right there on the western edge of downtown. Those are what you'd like to see done with this money, yes?
Absolutely correct. Yeah, I mean, this is a generational tax source. I'm 42 years old. I'll be an old man paying this tax, 30 years down the road from now. But there are projects that we have, you know, kind of in the hopper now that, you know, are not betting our future on a technology which we're still kind of developing, and things like the Emerald Trail, which would actually connect, far more neighborhoods than what this proposed UTC system would do downtown. This would include, you know, extensions into the east side, extensions into Durkeyville, extensions into Springfield, extensions into San Marco and Riverside that we currently do not have. And if you look at a place like Atlanta, where they've, you know, poured hundreds of million dollars into the Beltline there, which has really transformed all sorts of communities that have, you know, suffered from lack of investment for decades, and it's doing great things there. We have the same opportunity here with this gas, with these gas tax funds, to fund the continued expansion of the Emerald Trail, or to bring back passenger rail downtown, which has the ability to actually, stimulate more economic development in and around the La Villa area, that simply these, you know, autonomous vehicles do not have the capability, or not proven in the past the capability of being able to offer.
We're talking with the editors at the Jackson Mag about the proposed increase in the local gas tax. You would theoretically be paying 6 cents more a gallon if this passes from the city council vote to pay for a slew of infrastructure improvements across town. Those aren't controversial. The controversial piece of this is the $379 million that the Jacksonville Transportation Authority wants to spend out of this revenue to revamp the Skyway, what some people call the downtown people mover, converting it into autonomous vehicles, driverless cars. What do you think about this? 549-2937. Rusty is on the west side. Hey, Rusty.
Hey, Melissa, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Gasoline is one of those magical substances because it packs a whole lot of joules of energy per liter. Metaphorically, we've been drinking this stuff and breathing its exhaust for 100 years. and we have built an entire world around it. Since the turn of this century, we're paying quite a price for that. So, the Sunshine State as a whole, if you say that transit is dumb, ridiculous, costly, or worse, that transit or rail are for losers, then what you're really saying is that you are embracing the status quo, that the status quo is great, we just want more of it, and that you are planning to return to the car lot and pick up a huge new gas-burning V8. So look in the mirror, have some conscience, consider those grandchildren on your refrigerator.
So what are you saying then, Rusty? Where do you stand on this whole proposal?
That we can't urban sprawl in suburbia. We've got to turn that back. Somehow we've got to turn that back.
Okay.
And,
all right.
And we do that with transit.
Okay. So guys, Mike Ennis over at the Jackson, what about that? This is an attempt, the JTA says, to improve the urban core, to bring more people into the urban core, to reduce sprawl. What about that argument? Mike.
Yeah, I would.
And Ennis.
Well, I was going to just jump back real quick and just say, you know, what I don't want to really do is pit projects against each other, because I do think there is a need to figure out a future for the Skyway. There is a need to invest in mass transit. There's different types of mass transit, but getting back to the comment the caller just made, yes, at the end of the day, no matter whether we're talking about autonomous vehicles, light rail, commuter rail, local bus, or even replacing a people mover, if we don't change our land use policies, none of this stuff really matters. So really there needs to be this ongoing discussion about how to increase density around mass transit infrastructure, including the Skyway's existing stations, which we really don't have that conversation going on right now on a large scale within the downtown area, as well as how to really cluster complementing uses around a compact setting along future corridors that we may deem are valuable for transit, not in just downtown, but also other areas of the city as well.
Mike.
Yeah, I think there's really two issues here. You know, what is the future of transportation in the future? You know, and then what is, and that's a question that I probably couldn't answer. I'm certainly not the Elon Musk of the world, and my bank account shows that.
yes, but, I know the feeling. but what about this argument, though, that this could be a game-changing way to revitalize the urban core and get more people out of their cars? You don't buy that?
I think that the term game changer raises an interesting argument within itself. You know, we've been sold game changing projects all the time for downtown my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what we want to focus on is getting the basics correct. You know, how do we make a functioning mass transit, solution in Jacksonville? How do we make our existing systems work better, and how do we work those existing systems better with existing land use policies that really, you know, create density around these stations? And I think it's nice to look at the flashy renderings and talk about, you know, the future and a future that's unknown to any of us right now, but we really want to get the basics correct, and we're really trying to focus people on, let's not be impressed by the renderings. Let's really talk about what makes the city functional. And what makes the city functional is, you know, densifying around transit corridors, improving current service levels, and making something that works for, you know, the average everyday citizen.
Gideon is on the north side. Hello, Gideon.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
So my comment about the whole thing is encompassing around the Better Jacksonville plan that was set in place, which started in 2000 and was supposed to be or projected to be completed by 2010, no later than 2030. I actually attempted to look for some information on it on the COJ.net website, and there was no information. Now, I can't say that my search was thorough, but I guess my concern is if that system was set in place a few years ago, to be completed between 2010 and 2030. Everything, the reason or the purpose behind it seems to be what is repeated this time with the six cents price on the gas taxes. So is it that the Better Jackson Plan system had failed, so they're trying to do it again to repeat those same things between JTA?
This is a different animal altogether than the Better Jacks Plan, Gideon. But I take your point, because thank you for the call, Gideon. And as Davis, you know that the Better Jacks Plan did include road and infrastructure improvements along with a lot of other things. But it's understandable that a lot of folks out there would have questions about how is this different? What will this get the public? Why has the city delayed these infrastructure improvements so long? There are a lot of questions raised with his point.
Yeah, I mean, the Better Jacks Plan only played for a certain set of projects. However, the city does continue to grow. I mean, it continues to rapidly grow. And what we don't have is a consistent amount of, you know, money that we are put into a lot of these infrastructure projects. And in addition to that, as time goes on, you know, some of the original estimates for some of these projects end up costing a lot more than what they originally were estimated for. I mean, if we can take a look at the U2C here, back in 2015, when we first started having this discussion publicly, we were looking at something that was going to be between $64 million to $85 million, depending on what type of solution for the Skyway was taken. And now, 6 years later, we're talking about, you know, $379 million of the gas tax funding this project. So even that's a big jump over the course of 6 years.
Lots of emails, calls, and tweets on this hot topic. Bill emails the show, why not fund a streetcar system instead of UTC? It's a more proven form of transit. Here's an email from Christine. In other cities, a car may not be needed, but here almost everyone needs one. This will be a tax on people who already have trouble affording gas to get to jobs and childcare. But she says, I do love the idea of improving the Skyway. John emails the show and says, the game changers for downtown that the city should be pursuing are riverfront parks now. That's a plan to improve the waterfront with a big riverfront park. And the Emerald Trail. Far better improvements for less cost. Get smart, Jacksonville, he says. Again, a reference to the Emerald Trail, which you guys are in favor of using taxpayer money to complete. Groundwork Jacksonville is trying to fund that privately, I believe is my understanding. Here's an email from David. How does a 10-mile system with 40 to 50 autonomous vehicles have less capacity than a 2.5-mile system with 6 trains? And Mike Field, that's a reference to a point one of you made earlier. What about that?
Well, I can jump on that. I mean, okay. That's a pretty easy one to answer. So number one, I would say that's not an apples to apples comparison, because if you want to compare the 6 trains, I mean, you'd want to expand an actual fixed transit system 10 miles. It would have superior capacity to something that has much smaller vehicles. The second part of this is much of the expansions of what we're talking about here are going to be in mixed traffic. So you're going to be limited in the amount of capacity that your system is going to be able to move when your vehicles, as of today, legally they operate at about a speed of 12 to 15 miles an hour for safety reasons. So there are some systems that are out here already. There's a pilot program down in Orlando and Lake Nona. There is a pilot program in Columbus, Ohio, Houston, Texas, Las Vegas a couple years ago. But there's been some interesting results out of these pilot programs that will pretty give you some clear identification on the challenges with capacity, as well as running these things in mixed traffic. So really, when it comes to us, one of the best things that we could do here is to actually put this potential system on dedicated right-of-way. However, that does mean working with additional stakeholders such as FDOT or the Downtown Investment Authority, which at this point have not shown that they'll be allowing us to put the system on its own transit wing.
Let's go to Philip in St. Augustine. Hi, Philip.
Hi. Yeah, I'm from Colorado, and this project is mystifying to me. Mass transit is supposed to bring people to and from different areas within a city. It's supposed to take cars off the roads. All this does, this project, is it's for the people who are already down there. You already had to get down there in some way, and it's probably already going to be by a car. So I don't understand why we're calling this a mass project. It seems to be someone's pet project, and they just want it completed. And it's not really mass transit at all. You want to get from one area of the city to the other, and that's not what this does at all.
Thanks, Philip. Tamara is down. Tamara, you're in Mandarin. Tamara, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I live in Mandarin, but I work downtown, and I've always thought the Skyrail was a really great idea, but the problem is that it doesn't expand to enough places downtown, and so I don't think autonomous cars are going to make it any better either, because, I mean, the problem is that you have people that work downtown already, but you want to make downtown a destination, so you need to make the destination more appealing before you create this shiny new autonomous car system, which is cool, but like, where does it go? You know, you got to make people want to have a reason to ride that system.
So you don't think people would, if they put it over into Riverside, into San Marco, to the football stadium, you don't think that would do anything?
I think it would help, but I don't see the point. But why not do that with the Skyrail itself? You know, like, why create the shiny new autonomous vehicle thing when you have a system that works already? People were riding the Skyrail. Like, I used to work by the team station in San Marco, and I would ride the Skyrail to Hemings Plaza, but now I work on Bay Street.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that goes to, you know, east of Bay Street or Main Street, you know? And, like, I have to park, like, down by Maxwell House to walk to work. So, but we have all these empty slots. If we could improve parking and create systems that lead people to downtown, because Jacksonville is so huge, but it's like a bunch of towns strung together, right? So
yeah.
If we connect those systems, I feel that would be a lot of a better investment than being like, ooh, autonomous vehicle, shiny, you know what I mean?
Okay. All right. You know, thank you for that, Tamara. Mike Field, it's my understanding that Skyway ridership has been trending downward, although it did reach a peak of over 1 million riders, I think a few years ago. I'll double check that because we did get that number from the Florida Times Union the other day. And so, you know, we're hearing a lot of skepticism from callers about whether this can work. We're getting a lot of questions on Twitter about who's going to profit from the Skyway construction. There's a lot of cynicism about that. Here's another tweet. Someone asks, has the city ever hired a sustainable urban planner consultant? What about issues of sustainability with this project as well?
Well, again, I think our main point is let's really talk about the technology. And I don't think the technology on these systems is quite there yet, and certainly not enough to really be basing this billing this as a complete solution to downtown and connecting, you know, urban neighborhoods into downtown. I think our main kind of point here is that we need to kind of pump the brakes a little bit to understand that there are some limitations on this type of technology, and you know, what are ways that we can look at, you know, creating better mass transit? I mean, quite simply, Melissa, you're running a bus is far cheaper and with far more capacity than these vehicles currently.
And you know, and I do hope to have the CEO of JTA, Nat Ford, on at some point soon to put some of these questions to him. Here's another email from a listener. John emails the show. It would be nice if there was an agreed upon vision for this city and then infrastructure built around it, including an organized, reliable, and user-friendly transportation system. So far, all I hear are piecemeal approaches based on vested interests. Ennis Davis, a lack of a strategic, unified vision, is that part of the problem?
To me, that is a big problem, because again, no matter from a transit perspective, no matter what the selected technology and mode is, if your land use policies and development plans don't match that project, you're going to be in trouble in terms of ridership. I did want to comment on two things that were said previously, though. Number one, going back to the capacity issue, if you reduce the have something that has reduced capacity, you expand it to the stadium, there's a potential that that project won't even be able to accommodate the movement of large crowds at big stadium events or festivals like OneSpark, for example. And then just from a citywide perspective, I think it's very important for people to remember that the Skyway in and of itself was designed to be a downtown circulator. It was never intended to go across the entire city itself. That would be a completely different type of mass transit system. The best example of that would be down in Miami, where you have Metro Rail, which is a heavy rail system that connects the suburbs to downtown, and their Metro Mover, which circles downtown. That's basically
and by the way, not to cut you off, people keep tweeting and emailing asking why can't they put this money toward light rail between downtown and the beaches? So that's a perennial ask from people out there too.
Well, and I think that would be so that I think if you look at different alternatives, if you had this big pot of money, what could you do with the pot of money? You should have this open conversation of, you know, is there a way to reduce the amount of funds that go to one project, which frees up funds for something else? And maybe that discussion of a light rail or a commuter rail or a streetcar or something that even feeds the Skyway or U2C with additional riders from outside the downtown area, maybe that becomes maybe that plays a role in the conversation of what we could potentially do with funds. So we just really need to have kind of put the brakes down and have a large conversation on what each of our communities, you know, really need and how we can really best benefit from the potential money that could come through a gas tax.
There's a lot more at thejacksonmag.com, but the editors there, who really do know their stuff, I must say, they are well-versed in these issues. They're proposing the city reduce the Skyway ask in the gas tax and instead fund the Emerald Trail project and spend money to bring the Amtrak station downtown where the new multimodal transit site is located. We will effort to get the CEO of JTA on soon once the legislation hits the city council's desks and talk to them about it. But in the meantime, I want to thank you both, Michael Field and Ennis Davis at the Jackson Mag. Always good to get your insights. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Much more still ahead later. How you can reduce your stress this month. We'll have some tips, but up next.
Our logistics business today is pretty diversified.
They're locally headquartered, but Sudeth is making big logistics moves. We'll speak with their CEO after this. Well, they're a locally headquartered company, but they're making national logistics moves. I spoke about their growth and their plans for the future with Michael Branigan. He is the CEO at Sudeth. Hi, Michael. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Okay. Nice to be with you as well.
So Sudeth announced they've acquired another company, Daryl Flood, Inc. Tell us what this means for Sudeth and also the logistics industry as a whole in our region.
Okay, let me start off with Sudeth first. One of the key components of the Daryl Flood acquisition was their logistics business. They've had a very good track record of success, particularly in the home delivery and final mile business, which strategically was an area that we were focused on getting into, and we felt that an acquisition, particularly with all the other synergies with Daryl Flood, having their home delivery is a base for us to expand that from their base of business across our national footprint would be a big catalyst. So it's a significant strategic move for us to accelerate the growth of our logistics business and the diversification of our logistics business. in terms of Northeast Florida, there's not necessarily direct benefit, although they do have an operation, a home delivery operation that runs in Jacksonville. So it's nice for us to now have that operation supporting the home delivery business in Northeast Florida. But the rest of the benefits for Northeast Florida are more indirect. That the more we grow, the more position we are to continue to make investments in Northeast Florida as well as other markets across the U.S.
Right. You are a major corporate player here in Jacksonville. And I want to ask you, what has the pandemic been like in terms of its impact on the logistics world? How has it affected your operations? And what do you foresee coming out of this time of pandemic?
Yeah, very interesting question. Our logistics business today is pretty diversified in the sense of we have a contract logistics business, more of a traditional third-party logistics company, and that business has fared reasonably well, not really been impacted at all by the pandemic. We've seen consistent growth. Companies have to keep their supply chains moving. The mix of businesses we had were businesses that were not as affected by the pandemic, so the contract logistics business remained fairly robust during this period of time. We also have within our portfolio, we call the FF&E business, which is furniture, fixtures, and equipment. And in that business, we support retail, restaurants, hospitality sector when they're doing store openings, store closings, remodelings, a lot of modernization over the last few years. We're putting in more outdoor digital menu boards, kiosks inside of their quick serve restaurants and so forth. That business with that in those industries being greatly affected, our business was greatly affected as well. So we did see a fairly significant impact on the FF&E business over the past year or so. I think what we're seeing now is it does feel like you have a more momentum, more things are opening up in more places around the country. People are going to get back to growth. So we are feeling a little more optimistic that we'll see a continued growth in the contract logistics business, a return to growing in the FF&E business. The other thing that's really nice about the Darrell Flood business with the home delivery and final mile is there has been that fundamental shift, right, where people buying online, online retail that's requiring more and more home delivery and final mile. So you've seen that part of the business grow through the pandemic. That's more of a secular shift as well. So perhaps it was accelerated by the pandemic, but we see those trends of the move to online and more home delivery final mile continuing, which is why we really like this acquisition in the markets they're in, but also the potential to deploy this type of solution across our entire national footprint.
Nice. Now, you do have a national footprint, of course, but Northeast Florida, in terms of becoming a logistics hub, we've seen so much growth in that sector. How do you see that part of the local economy continuing to grow in the coming decade?
Yeah, absolutely. We're very bullish, and I'm very bullish on the growth in Northeast Florida, particularly in the logistics business. You know, you have the port, and with the deepening of the port and access to the larger ships, that's an important conduit. We were always in favor of that for that reason. We think that's an important catalyst for Northeast Florida. But it's just Jacksonville is growing. It's an important logistics sector. You see a lot of new commercial development for warehouse infrastructure and distribution infrastructure. You see the Amazon effect that's had in the marketplace. So we're going to continue to invest in the Northeast Florida market. We think it's a high growth market for logistics as well as our other lines of business. And we're very optimistic about the future of Jacksonville and Northeast Florida.
Terrific. Thank you, Michael. He's Michael Branigan, President and CEO of the Suddeth Companies based here in Jacksonville. Thanks.
Okay. You have a great week and be safe.
Well, Earth Day is coming up this Thursday. And we are marking that this week here at WJCT. We're going to host a virtual panel through our ADAPT platform, looking at the roles parks and green space can play in the fight against climate change and what you can do to help. Our lead reporter at AdaptFlorida.org is Brendan Rivers. He's on the line. Hey, Brendan, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Okay, let's begin with the ADAPT event. It's coming up virtually tomorrow night, 7 p.m. You'll be moderating this discussion, looking at the importance of parks and green space to store carbon, reduce urban temperatures, and even mitigate flooding, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, those are just some of the big benefits of parks and green space when we're talking about climate change. But these spaces and trees kind of have all of these benefits on top of that. I mean, there's been research that shows they can also help reduce crime and increase work productivity. So there's lots of benefits to incorporating these kinds of things into urban spaces.
Who will you be speaking with?
So we got a great group of speakers lined up. We have Dr. Rebecca Beaver. She is Coastal Geology and Adaptation Coordinator for the National Park Service's Climate Change Response Program. And a lot of her research is focused on how sea level rise is impacting parks throughout the country and how to protect the parks from sea level rise. We'll have Gloria McNair, who's the Community Engagement Coordinator for Groundwork Jacksonville, which is this nonprofit organization that's working with the city to repair some of the creeks that have been harmed here. So Hogan's Creek and McCoy's Creek. And they're also the group that's working on building the Emerald Trail, which is basically this big circular nature trail that's being built around the urban core of Jacksonville. And then we'll have Nancy Powell, who is the executive director of Scenic Jacksonville and one of the leaders in the Riverfront Parks Now Coalition. And she's really been one of the leaders in this kind of ongoing effort to push Jacksonville to really include parks and green space in its planning for development.
Both the Emerald Trail Project and the Riverfront Parks Now Coalition, those are two different initiatives, but they're all in this same wheelhouse, increasing green space in the city, getting the civic leadership behind that idea. These green space creations, what we'll learn in your talk, they can benefit the city in mitigating against climate change, but they also have a number of other benefits.
Right. Yeah. And I think Dr. Rebecca Beavers and Gloria McNair will really be able to provide some insight for us on that because they're kind of involved with these existing or ongoing park projects. So they'll really be able to kind of tell us how these spaces could benefit communities like Jacksonville. And then Nancy Powell's kind of looking towards the future of these spaces in Jacksonville and thinking about how the city could incorporate these kinds of things and how it could benefit the city and residents. So it should be a really interesting talk.
Now let's take a minute to pat ourselves on the back just a little. We're excited that WJCT Public Media and our digital magazine on climate adaptation, adaptflorida.org, is joining some important national collaboratives. These are a slew of different media outlets joining forces and pooling resources so that we can really increase our coverage around the climate crisis and get information to the public. So important here in Florida. So let's share this news, Brendan.
Yeah, so the big one is we have been announced as one of the 22 news outlets that's going to be participating in this new Covering Climate Collaborative that's being organized by the Local Media Association, which is one of the largest local media trade associations in North America. And they have a lot of lofty goals. I don't want to get into that and how much they want to share about their ultimate goals, but basically they're going to be helping to coordinate collaborative projects. They're going to be providing help with data reporting, and it'll give us a chance to work with some really great newsrooms. I mean, some of the other participating organizations are the Miami Herald, which I'm sure all of our listeners are familiar with, WBEZ in Chicago, which is one of the biggest public media stations in the country. So lots of really great news organizations are going to be involved with this. And I think it's just going to be really beneficial to small newsrooms like ours that have limited resources that have already committed to covering climate. This will just make it so that we can cover climate change more and it can improve our coverage.
Right. So this is really everybody participating gets a synergistic boost. And it's exciting because you are working on this full time here in our newsroom. That's how important we think this issue is, that we have a dedicated full time reporter like you educating the public about this 5 days a week. And so as we come up on Earth Day this Thursday, you know, the urgency of this really can't be overstated. There's not much time left to really begin a serious transition to a clean energy economy, because a lot of the worst impacts of sea level rise, planetary warming, and some of the other impacts that we expect to come in the coming decades, they're already baked in. We're going to experience these changes. The question is how bad they're going to be. That's really the only question left.
Right. Yeah. And we're already feeling a lot of the impacts of this. So you're right. The question really is how much are we going to avoid in the future? I think the science is pretty clear that it's happening, and there is a lot that we can do. So it's just a matter of kind of motivating the public to really get behind significant climate action so that we can really cut the emissions, the fossil fuel emissions that are causing the climate to change, so that we can avoid the worst impacts of future climate change.
So with all of that said, how can people join tomorrow night's virtual event?
Well, if you go to adaptflorida.org, which is our website focused on climate change, how it's impacting Northeast Florida and what's being done about it, you scroll down a little bit and you'll see the name of the event. It's Adapt, Using Parks and Green Space in the Fight Against Climate Change. And there's a register button there. Click there. It's a free event. So just go ahead and register, and then you can join in tomorrow night for this free event. Should be really, really great.
I would encourage everyone to check it out. You can also subscribe to the newsletter that Brendan and the ADAPT team send out at adaptflorida.org. Join this community as we are now part of a national covering climate collaborative. And check out the event tomorrow night. Thanks so much. Our lead ADAPT reporter, Brendan Rivers, will be moderating that discussion. Check it out tomorrow evening. Thanks so much, Brendan.
Thanks, Liv.
And happy Earth Day, everyone, in advance. Still to come, April is National Stress Awareness Month. Did you know that? We'll have a few tips on helping you reduce that stress as we speak with renowned yogi Dan Nevins here on the First Coast. That's coming up in just a moment. You're listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. We'll be right back.
Couch Mountain, an Asheville, North Carolina, ecologically minded community with gardens and a conservation preserve. 67 home sites on 335 acres. Now releasing new Mountain View home sites. More at couchmountainnc.com.
Florida Homestead Check, which provides specialized property tax advice for homeowners. Homestead portability provides potential tax savings. Before selling a home, a homeowner can check their portability at portabilitypros.com.
The six-hour documentary Hemingway by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick has had its initial airing on PBS and is now available for streaming. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll visit the Ernest Hemingway House in Key West. We'll discuss environmental history and science and New Deal public works projects. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Tanya Mosley.
Beginning in preschool, Black girls are most likely to be suspended. Preschool. This is not an inequity. This is a crisis.
Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley joins us to talk about legislation she's sponsoring that aims to end the disproportionate punishment of Black girls in school. That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
For 60 years, Cuba has been led by a Castro. That era is about to end. Raul Castro is stepping down, handing power on to someone who's not in the family. But the country's economy is on edge. So, what's next for Cuba, Cubans, and its Communist Party? That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, after more than a year of dealing with the pandemic and all the stress it's brought us, maybe you're seeking new ways to find your zen lately. April is actually National Stress Awareness Month. I got a few ideas on how to deal with stress from First Coast veteran and renowned yoga and meditation teacher, Dan Nevins. Hey, Dan, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Melissa. So great to be here.
I did not realize that April was actually Stress Awareness Month, which is great because we need to talk about our stress, our pandemic stress, especially. I think as this has worn on, people have just gotten more and more burned out, stressed out. So as a yoga teacher and someone who talks a lot about mindfulness and meditation, what are your thoughts about Stress Awareness Month?
Well, I mean, I think it's relevant now more than ever because I think more people are experiencing a stress that they can actually point to. You know, like we all experience stress, right? It's an everyday part of life, but people can actually like point to their stressors nowadays in unison. And So it's good to raise awareness that, like, hey, stress is real. This exists and we have to manage it. And so I'm happy that the month exists and then I'm really grateful to be able to provide tools to people to help them manage that stress and move forward more powerfully in their life.
And yoga and meditation are two really powerful examples I know you like to talk about. What would you say to people who've never explored either one of them?
I'd say now's the time, right? Especially meditation because It's absolutely for any single person, there's zero barriers to, I mean, people like me, I thought it was impossible. Oh, I can't do it. And then I just was taught that I was probably approaching it wrong. That meditation is all about just being still and being present. And you can do it, you know, like I even use driving as a mindfulness exercise. Now, not quite meditation because preferably your eyes are closed. And when you're driving, that's a really terrible idea. But
yeah,
just being complete, like turn the music off. Reduce any like environmental noise. Obviously your phone should be off and away from you anyway, and just being completely present to driving. Like even that experience is going to help you be more mindful and aware. And that's the deal with stress. It's becoming aware that I'm stressed. Most of the time we're a little bit oblivious that we're stressed out until there's a breakdown and that, oh man, I'm stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
The more we practice mindfulness, and a yoga practice is a great way to become more mindful. Meditation practice is a great way to become more mindful. The more practice we have being mindful, the more mindful we become. So we recognize that we're stressed earlier, sooner, before there's a breakdown. And then you can implement tools. And if I could, I'd love to share a very quick, easy pranayama exercise. Pranayama, a Sanskrit word, prana meaning life force, and ayama meaning restraint, or in this case, control. So breath control or breath work. There's a, you know, when you're noticing your stress, this is very easy exercise that we can do called box breathing. And it's easy to remember, too, which is also helpful, right? When we're trying to access a tool, like, what was that thing? And there's nothing complicated about it. You think of a box, like a square, has four sides or four corners, however you look at it. And so we're going to take breathing in four sections, and we're going to do it for 4 seconds. So you inhale for 4 seconds until your lungs are all the way full. You hold the full inhale for 4 seconds. And then you exhale to empty lungs for 4 seconds. And then you hold the exhale for 4 seconds. So each one of those actions of inhaling is one side of the box, and then the other side of the box is holding it, and then the other side of the box is exhaling, and the other side of the box is holding that exhale.
Mm-hmm.
You do those that 4 times, and that simple exercise will completely regulate your nervous system and bring you back to center, no matter how stressed out you are. And so that's a very simple, easy tool that anyone can use anytime, even while driving, because there's no necessarily, you don't have to keep your eyes closed. And I use that every time I start to realize that I'm stressed over something, and it is a complete reset for me.
Yeah,
that's available to anyone, anytime.
Anyone can do it. The driving tip is good, too. I really find that driving is such a respite for my busy brain, because you are forced to just focus on one thing. And without even realizing it, you're calming your brain down, because we have a tendency to let our brains jump around to a million topics all the time, which stresses us out. So mindfulness really is about calming the mind. Yeah, the monkey mind, as it's called. Yeah, I have a big problem with that. So these are just easy ways we can reduce stress during this Stress Awareness Month. So thank you so much, Dan Nevins. Always good to get your insights. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Melissa.
And hope you have a stress-free day. Thanks for listening this morning. And thanks to all of our guests and callers, along with producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, news director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. If you missed any part of today's show, our podcast is up later today on all platforms. You can also listen through the WJCT app. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.